I'm Marianne Kobosek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with David Brumley, who is Cybersecurity Professor at Carnegie Mellon and CEO of software security firm For All Secure. We're going to be discussing cybersecurity issues involving medical devices. So, David, as you speak to device makers and sort of survey the medical device landscape, what is your sense of the challenges that medical device makers are having in terms of including in their product submissions to the FDA the kinds of cyber details that the FDA now expects? What do you think is giving device makers the most difficulties?
The FDA really recently increased the scrutiny for cybersecurity, which is an absolutely good thing. And this really started, late last year in July, where they had some draft guidance that came out and was ratified this year. So I think what device manufacturers struggle with is wrapping their heads around this. Medical device manufacturers have increased the amount of wireless, Bluetooth, and internet connectivity for their devices. We know that those are attack vectors, but typically they've looked at this as only a safety issue as opposed to a cybersecurity issue. And that's sometimes surprising to people who aren't familiar with regulations that there's a difference. But the manufacturers traditionally have looked at quality assurance for safety purposes, but that didn't mean they couldn't be hacked. And so now they're trying to figure out how do they adapt those same safety protocols to make the devices more secure against offensive cybersecurity attacks.
So, David, overall, what sorts of issues do you see as most concerning when it comes to cybersecurity shortcomings in medical device products that are on the market today that you hope will be addressed as new products are reviewed by the FDA during the pre-market submission process?
The biggest thing that I think that we can hope for is increasing the cadence of updates. The legacy traditional approach, and this is only a few years ago, was when you built a medical device, you got it certified and it kind of stayed that way forever. And of course, we all have software updates for our phones or computers. We know that's not really how things work anymore. And so that's what I see as kind of the biggest challenge that they're focusing is how can we get those updates to devices as new vulnerabilities are detected, as we find new issues in our software, while still maintaining that same high quality of care.
So when it comes to the software updates, what are the challenges? Is it a matter of sort of the logistical challenges that, entities don't want to pull medical devices offline because they're needed by patients? And when do we update software? What kinds of challenges do you see?
I think the biggest one right now is regulatory and what is going to be enough to make sure that they're abiding by regulations and that they can get these devices with patients. So, if you think about it, we've all had software updates that have broken our computers. They obviously can't have that. It's not so much a timing, it's that making sure that, hey, they tested in a lab, it worked fine. But then when it goes out into the real world, something breaks and being able to come up with a cycle that makes sure that doesn't happen.
Do you have any advice for medical device makers when it comes to the software updates in terms of, early on in the development life cycle that, kind of foreseeing that if we need to do updates, we can make it as easy as possible? Or, is that really something that's hard to predict because you never know what vulnerabilities might be, later discovered?
Everyone wrestles with the problem that you don't know what vulnerabilities are going to be later discovered. What the big shift is to think about how rapidly we can get those updates out. Because again, it's this legacy approach. The idea traditionally from these manufacturers and the entire mindset, the entire culture that's built into the companies making these is our devices are safe. And safety is very much like, it's going to work even if the person is hit by lightning, right? Like the battery's not going to explode, things like that. Cybersecurity is another ball game entirely. The challenge is that immediately when you start saying, hey, your devices may be at risk, they're going to say, no, they're safe. And there's this entire culture shift to get people, the entire teams, thinking in terms of cybersecurity isn't a one and done thing. You can't predict all the different things that are going to happen. What we can predict is the need to rapidly iterate and to get those out to customers. So it's a culture shift, especially around regulation. And the reason I keep focusing on regulation is that sets the bar about what's going to be put into patients, right? Like if you don't get regulatory approval, it's just not going to go out.
Are there certain categories of medical devices that you find most concerning when it comes to the cybersecurity risk?
Anything that has over-the-air updates or connectivity is a big one. And we're seeing this a lot in diagnostics. And this is, by the way, Marianne, kind of personal to me. I'm a cancer survivor. And so I've gone through surgery, radiation, and far too many doctor's appointments with connected devices. If you've ever had one of these scans, you know that you're in a big machine and that machine is connected to a technician who can view the scan. All that information, of course, gets thrown over the internet or through the medical, through the hospital's network so the doctor can pull it up on their system. Software techs can remotely log in. All these devices are increasingly connected just to get information out there and to make it so people can consume information in the right way. But it also greatly expands the attack surface. And we've seen cases where bad guys break into medical devices and they didn't even know it was a medical device. It just happened to be vulnerable and they were on it because they used an off-the-shelf exploit to get there.
Now, when it comes to the challenges involved in securing some of the AI and machine learning enabled medical devices that are being developed or are already in use, what are some of the challenges? Are the challenges any different than, the more traditional sorts of devices in use that don't necessarily rely on AI or machine learning?
I don't know that there's a huge difference in security. I mean, one of the cool things about AI is it's repeatedly shown to offer high quality diagnostic information to people. And so I have the most trust for it there, being able to review medical records to detect cancers that might have been missed from a radiologist, things like that. It's really good. I think one of the challenges that we face more is on the privacy end of these. How do we train these models in a way that we provide high accuracy without also leaking patient information? This is also a tension with the concept that we know that more personalized healthcare is more effective, but the more personalized, that also means that you need more personal information. And so how do you weigh all these pros and cons? It's less of a cybersecurity, more of a privacy conundrum there, I think.
So, David, you mentioned that, you use the sort of the medical imaging or, the sort of de big devices that patients go into to get scanned and, for tests. And then, that data is then shared with doctors and the technician can see it and so on and so forth. But we also hear a lot about remote monitoring, patients at home being monitored either by, full-fledged medical sort of devices, but maybe they're also wearables that they're not necessarily under the FDA's regulatory umbrella. What sorts of issues do you see now and potentially emerging when it comes to cybersecurity and remote monitoring, whether it's, again, a full-fledged sort of FDA approved device versus, a more consumable wearable? What are some of the issues?
I think there's obviously the issue about increased connectivity, where when people go home, that also means the hospital has to be able to reach in to gather that diagnostic data. And of course, you're going to open it up to the manufacturers getting more data. So beyond cybersecurity, there's also increased privacy concerns. This is a huge area. We also run into an issue where most of the cybersecurity standards really focus on things that are used for direct patient diagnostic and critical life safety issues. The more wearables you get in, you kind of get into this gray zone of it's not necessarily diagnostic in itself. And so you're going to use more off-the-shelf software. It potentially has a lower security bar, but that in turn can make it easier to break into. So you have this tension. Like, I think the stuff that we absolutely need to work because it's life critical, people do a lot of work on. But what we're seeing is this increase of non-life critical stuff that just improves healthcare. And that's just held to a lower bar.
So, David, you had said earlier about, FDA's concern is, I guess number one concern is patient safety. But as we know, a cyber incident involving a medical device not only presents possible patient safety issues, but it could also bring compromises into the hospital's network, data compromises, that sort of thing. How do you weigh that in terms of, if you secure it, are you already taking care of the patient safety concerns, or are there like two sets of issues when it comes to cybersecurity, patient harm versus data compromise or disruption? How does this all play out?
Oh, no doubt we have to put patient safety first. You have to make sure those medical devices aren't creating risk for the patient because they're getting treatment for something. Data compromise is something that we have a number of methods to deal with. First, we don't want it to happen, right? It's always bad when it happens. But what we're seeing is a rise of things like ransomware. And you can often pay these people off. Like, no one is going to die because of ransom. You do end up in a negative feedback cycle where if a hospital pays off a ransomware attack, well, where are they going to get that money from? Of course, their rates are going to have to go up. And so it does affect the cost of healthcare, which affects patient care. But I think if you're going to put a prioritization, you always have to focus on the person that you know that's getting life-critical treatment and making sure they're safe.
And when we hear so much about ransomware attacks on hospitals and often on their vendors, what is most concerning to you about keeping those medical devices either segmented or protected against whatever else might be going on in the environment that might spread to the medical devices?
I mean, it's a really difficult problem. I mean, hospitals have traditionally taken this segmentation approach. We're going to build firewalls that try to segment things, and that just hasn't traditionally worked very well. It's like trying to build a dam in New Orleans, right? It may work temporarily, but not for very long. If you think about it, you have a huge number of people who have access to medical and patient data, and these people are all working from different workstations, and just a single slip up on one of those can cause a cybersecurity incident. Beyond that, the very nature of healthcare means that we have to collaborate with between doctors, different institutions, and different devices. And so you have this ripe ecosystem of everyone needs to share information, and that information is super important to protect. And you're also dealing with the people who are sharing it aren't cybersecurity experts.
And finally, David, in terms of further steps that the FDA might consider taking to help promote the development and the use of more secure medical devices, any suggestions beyond what they've been doing so far?
I do. I put a lot of thought into this, you know, as someone where this is, again, near and dear to my heart. The FDA issues guidance, which is really upper and lower bounds about what you should do. There are general policy guidelines about the sorts of activities you should be conducting, but not how you go about doing them. And in cybersecurity, how you do things is super important. Saying that you should have a documented process for tracking new cybersecurity risks in your devices, this is what the FDA says. I mean, anyone can come up with a process to document stuff. It could be an Excel spreadsheet, for example. The real nuts and bolts of these are what sort of techniques are you employing to check the software? How are you doing this to make sure when you change things, it doesn't break? And then how do you deliver this quickly? And so a lot of what we've been doing, both in research and practice, is trying to build up reference architectures for these sorts of things that go beyond the generic advice and say, here's a system that a number of cybersecurity experts have looked at. And if you use this system, you should be safe.
Well, thank you very much, David. I've been speaking to David Brumley. I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.